Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, we're up to episode 74 of the Vision Board Podcast. Welcome back. I'm Tristan Cannell and Johnny Stofko is here.
How you feeling today, Tristan? You ready to rock?
Freaking awesome. We got Evander in the house, my man.
Evander, the real deal, Holyfield.
Yeah, Evander. Man, I still remember, I think it was 90. Was it 96 that he fought Tyson?
I'm pretty sure, but, you know, the older I get, those years get a little cloudy as well.
I still remember that because I remember being at the Workers Club, I think, in Blacktown, and we just went out for lunch, and I remember it being in the background. That's the one where, the first one where he knocked out Tyson, and I think the 11th, by memory, it was. But I still remember that kind of, I think I was 13 or 14 years old, and still, back then, what I really enjoyed about being the heavyweight champ, it was like, the same as when Rocky and Apollo were heavyweight champ. You were the king of the world, you know what I mean? But now there's like a million heavyweight champs, so unfortunately that kind of title is kind of
for sure
lost its glamour.
Yeah, for sure. I remember when I 96 would have put me at 14, and these guys were such polarizing figures, it was almost like they weren't real. Like, the characters like Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, they were almost like in the same category for me as like Arnold from The Predator and Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
Yeah.
It was almost like it took me to get older to realize that, you know, the real aspect of, you know, what I was seeing on TV, that this is just a normal dude who just really excels at one thing.
Definitely. It's quite interesting that we did have a golden period of heavyweights when you think that you had your Ali Frazier Foreman period, and then you had Larry Holmes straight after that, and then the heavyweight period of Holyfield, Tyson, and Lennox Lewis. We're quite blessed to have that. And, you know, the Klitschko brothers really did dominate over the last few years. So they haven't really seen it. But hopefully, again, we've got some good young talent in there. And it's their time to shine, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to see with the evolution and maturation process of Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua. Before we came on air, you were bringing up the New Zealand kid, Joseph Parker.
Yeah, Joseph Parker. I would love to see Joseph Parker versus the guy that you just mentioned from
Joshua?
Joshua from England.
Yeah.
I think he's brilliant.
Kid's bodied up.
Mate, I've never seen a body like that. He's 6 foot six. He looks like a 6 foot one bodybuilder.
Yeah.
He is athletic and he can punch, man.
Yeah, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but are you familiar with what's going on right now in the heavyweight division with there was supposed to be, was it supposed to be Klitschko was supposed to fight
Tyson Fury,
and then Fury retired? Did you hear this?
I think he was having some sort of substance abuse problem, so I think he's gone into
like a deep depression, and I already walked away from the sport, and then Lucas Brown's name has been brought up.
Yeah, and then Lucas Brown, I think, was meant to fight Klitschko, but I think Klitschko got injured in training, so that fight's off. So I think they're trying to find an opponent, because obviously all the controversy from Lucas Brown stemming from the fight where he tested positive to a banned substance following...
But that was proven not to be a banned substance. It was like it's pretty much what happened with the tainted meat.
Well, I think
allegedly.
Yeah, I'm just not sure what the actual outcome was, but the fact that he was clean 2 days before the fight and then all of a sudden dirty straight after.
Especially for clenbuterol, which is a bronchodilator initially created for asthma patients, which is bodybuilders use as a
cutting agent.
Yeah, so for a heavyweight to take that, it just sounded fishy from jump.
It does. And then 2 days, why would you take it 2 days when you need the kind of like full, if you needed some sort of advantage? Like, it makes sense if you were like a normal other weight athlete, because you'd be cutting weight essentially. So
have you seen Shannon Briggs lately?
He's still a monster. He's like a grandpa, right?
Dude, and that's the thing. No, Shannon Briggs is dangerous.
He's funny, too.
He's funny, and he walks around. Did you see his YouTube videos?
I see.
Let's go, champ.
I like it.
Let's go, champ. He talks to himself. So he's stalking right now, Klitschko.
Have you seen the one where he's in the restaurant, and he, like, he throws something, I think, at Klitschko, and they both just blow up?
Dude, they just put I don't know how old this video is, but they're down in Hollywood, Florida. And the thing about Shannon Briggs, guys, is he's older. He's in his mid-40s, but he took an extended period of time off of the sport. It might have been something like 8 years. And the reason why he's so dangerous is because he's so skilled. And he is a very smooth and seasoned heavyweight.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
It's really risky to fight a guy like that because he's just dangerous.
Yep.
And he's like a savvy veteran, so a lot of people just don't want to fight him. And then there's also that big heavyweight from Cuba. Do you know who I'm talking about?
What's his name?
Man, do you have your YouTube up or your Google?
Yeah, I can.
That would be an awesome fight. He's another one of these heavyweights that is just dangerous that everybody's avoiding. But I've been seeing on these boxing forums that a lot of people would love to see the Shannon Briggs fight versus, man, I can't think of his name. It's going to, when you pull it up, you're going to be like, oh, that guy.
I'll say heavyweight boxer Cuba.
Yeah. And he's just dangerous. But back to Holyfield, for me, as you're looking for this fighter, his body type was, when I was a kid, I was so intrigued by his shoulders. Did you bring it up?
Luis Ortiz?
Yeah, Luis Ortiz. Do you see photos of him?
Yeah, he looks pretty jacked.
He's an animal. So, like, the thing about the heavyweight division now is you really don't have that invincible Mike Tyson in his prime. You really don't have that athlete-type guy who would sell pay-per-view cards worldwide like an Evander Holyfield or a Lennox Lewis.
It's true.
And I don't know what, you know, why that is.
Because they just don't fight each other.
At the end of the day, what the UFC does really well is, despite some issues with Brock Lesnar and things like that,
the best guys
fight each other. It's like Conor McGregor's not going to fight for 12 months. What do? They put him in a savage like Alvarez.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great fight.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. November 11th, right? Madison
Square
Garden.
It's like, guys, you two are probably the best around that division. Fight.
And Eddie, the Underground King, I have nothing but great things to say about. I cannot wait for that fight.
Well, I think it's going to be close, yeah.
Because, you know, 90% of the UFC fans right now, that's a bro science stat, because obviously I don't know the real number, are Conor fans. And Conor fans have only been UFC fans for about 3 years at the most. So they really didn't see Eddie's.
But they pay the bills, unfortunately.
I'm talking about just the knowledge of the sport about what type of guy Conor's getting ready to face in Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, I think they probably need to put a little bit more Eddie out there so people aren't disappointed when he smokes him.
Ooh, are you predicting Eddie Alvarez?
I just got a little feeling, just a touch of feeling. Like he's...
I
don't think Conor's got that much to lose, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
he loses.
He still has a 145
strap. He's
still
going to get a good fight. He takes 12 months off. Still makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
Comes back. Dana will give him the fight that he wants.
Yeah,
like, if he needs a rematch, he'll get a rematch.
Yeah. I think that in a perfect world for the UFC, they obviously want Conor to win. But
do they? If he doesn't want to fight for 12 months, it's kind of like...
Where did you get this 12-month number? Well, is that what he said?
Kind of having a baby?
I don't know. Is that what the announcement was?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But back... Yeah, you're not going to let the UFC and Brock Lesnar thing go on.
No, I like it. Especially really affected one of our boys, Mark Hunt.
Okay.
That's not good.
Is it because in your head, correct me if I'm wrong, you feel that the UFC knew that they were putting an athlete in who had a significant advantage due to the illegal substances he was taking, and he was putting another guy's health at risk?
Yeah, I think so as well. But I think Mark Hunt still has to put his hand up. He knew what he was getting himself into. It's not like... After the fight, he tested positive, and then Mark Hunt blows up. But Mark knew prior to the fight that it was a 99% chance that he was tested positive or something. Because at the end of the day, he's a wrestler, and their bodies that they have to put on the line, what they wrestle twice a week or three times a week, they literally have to take those sort of substances just to make it out alive, man. So I think, you know, nothing against the UFC, but, yeah, I think they have to look into protection and, you know, if they want to be taken seriously as a professional sport, then they have to be having some sort of protocol, especially with the new protocol they've taken. They're not using IVs anymore, right?
So. Well, they have the most stringent testing policy with USADA. They brought in the Olympic Committee to do all their and it's random testing. So these guys, for instance, Alex talks about you could get tested at any time and you have a certain like amount of, say you're not at your house, you have a certain amount of time to get back to them and get that sample in.
Yep.
So my question is, though, which is really a gray area, is how they choose who's getting tested. I hear stories of, who are they talking about? A fighter, welterweight, really, really in great shape, and he's like, I get tested all the time. He's like, I've been tested like... Trujillo. Trujillo was talking about because of his body type. He hasn't fought in a while. Shout out to Abel, Vision Board alum. He was saying he was getting tested like once a month.
That's right.
And then, you know...
I'm sure Sage Northcutt would be getting tested all the time too, right?
I mean, you would think, especially...
He looks like fucking Tarzan.
Yeah, and then if you look into, you know, the history of his father being caught with, you know... Did you know that? His dad was a bodybuilder. His dad was caught with drugs, so it's... I don't know if you would be tested.
Then.
Yeah, Google that guy. Sage Northcutt's dad. What comes up, you're going to be shocked.
You probably end up getting You know when you Google search something and it comes up Siege Northcote's dad, like someone's done it, like it actually puts it out there. Holy shit! There's a lot of people trying to look at.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Like it was, he got caught with a couple like Mexican supplements. One was steroids, I believe. One was cocaine trafficking in the late '80s, early '90s.
That party boy.
Yeah, he was that bodybuilder boy. And then you got a kid like, there is this thing to where, if you remember Little Hercules in the late '90s, this little 8-year-old bodybuilder who was built like, you know, a 30-year-old bodybuilder, but he was 8, hadn't gone through puberty yet. There's that story of his parents forcefully giving him steroids as a young kid. And stories like that surface if you just Google it. And it's tough to say Northcutt wasn't one of these guys who was just given these supplements as a young boy, maybe didn't know about it, because he's been built like George St. Pierre since he was like 14 years old, if you look it up.
Yeah.
And who's to say that the father just wasn't putting that? Now, I'm not meaning to create, you know, but this is already out there on the internet. You could Google it yourself. And Sage is kind of like the golden boy right now. But back to the testing policies, I would, if I was Dana, I wouldn't want to be testing a guy like Sage. Because he's trying, you know, he's right now on that that pedestal.
I guess you got to be looking to make it feel look like it's fair, right?
Yeah, but so yeah, he is one of the, you know, Northcutt was on the cover of what, karate or taekwondo magazine as a young dude. He's a hell of a fighter, super talented, super athletic. But you always got to wonder when you see a body type like that, such a young age as well.
It's actually interesting you bring up GSP. It was pretty classy what you did today.
You see that what he did? Up. So on, he posted on his social media, because you know how Michael Bisping's been calling him out.
So
Michael
he?
Bisping's been calling him out to put the title on the line for them to fight in Canada. Is it UFC 206 going to be in Canada?
Okay.
I think 206.
Mm-hmm.
So he today, because all Bisping's been talking shit all week, but he's respectfully said on his thing, "Hi Michael, thanks for like calling me out. Appreciate it. The only issue here is I've still got issues with the UFC and Dana to clear up first, but I appreciate the offer and I'll get back to you shortly."
Yeah, the ever classy George St. Pierre.
Yeah, it was awesome. But yeah. I thought I'd just bring that up.
Yeah, back to Holyfield. What's your opinion on like his, when you were younger and what you would see on the magazine cover and his body type, superhero style, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. Those shoulders.
It's the shoulders. I remember, like, they look like basketballs.
I used to love that mustache, man.
Yeah, I love how you say mustache. The mustache.
Mustache, man.
He was almost like, he reminded me of a character from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I think it was Bald Bull. Did you play Punch-Out?
Maybe they made him.
But Bald Bull was a white guy. But he was like the shaved head, the mustache, the shoulders. It always reminded me of Holyfield.
Maybe they intentionally did that.
Who knows?
Call him out.
Yeah, but I think when did Tyson and Holyfield fought once in 94?
I just looked up 96 and 97.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, pretty interesting about that body type and you know the things he's been accused of, but never proved. So
yeah,
you know you're innocent
until proven guilty. True.
But it'll be interesting to get his headspace on some of the keys to his success. Overcoming adversity, all the things that he's been through. And guys, I don't have any children, but if I had a son, the last thing I would want him to do is become a professional fighter.
Oh, definitely.
That has to be the toughest road.
Oh, I could
you know what I'm
imagine.
Saying? Especially in the shadows of Evander Holyfield, because I know you know one of his sons, Evan, is a fighter.
We'll chat to him about his childhood, but it kind of most really top ranked fighters all kind of have that sort of same background, coming from a poorer sort of background. Learning a lot of lessons in life. So we'll pick his brain. He's on in about 5 minutes time, guys. But before we get him on, just a big thank you to all of you guys. We've been getting a lot of messages via email, social media, Johnny's Snapchat, a lot of different things, a lot of people getting involved, sharing our stuff. So we really just appreciate it and just send a, you know, big I love you out there.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to give a shout out to a name that just comes to the tip of my tongue. If you're listening, Jonathan Sacedo, man, we really appreciate the support.
Oh, yeah, Jonathan.
Yeah, he's been taking,
cool guy.
Sharing our stuff, really, when we get feedback like this, it's just super encouraging to where even if it's just one person sharing our stuff or commenting, we know we're on the right track, and that's what we want to do. We want to keep bringing names that you guys recognize, maybe some names that you don't, and just help tell the story of overcoming adversity, advice to people listening out there who may be struggling with things, and showing that through, you know, focus, persistence, dedication, commitment, surrounding yourself around the right people. If you have a goal, you've identified the plan of attack, you could get there. And I feel that's where our show could benefit people out there listening, you know, by bringing these people who've been through it, been through the grinder, just because we see where they've gotten to.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we forget that that path that led them there, and a lot of times that path is outlined and paved with a lot of adversity.
I agree. So, guys, best way to let other, like, get other people involved, get them inspired, tell them about the show. If everyone could subscribe via iTunes, leave a quick 5-star review, that would be very, very appreciated.
Also, guys, you can go to our website at www.divisionboardpodcast.com. You could subscribe to our newsletter that way. Tristan and I, on that website, you can go /ebook. We brought to you a nice little piece of information, kind of let you guys into what our training looks like. This is our passion project. What we also really love to do is helping people. So we coach people. And on that ebook, which you'll find if you put your email in, it's an awesome little guide to get your core where it needs to be, strengthen those muscles that are vital for functional movements and everyday. That's where your power comes from. That's where your endurance comes from, is your core. You also find a sample nutrition page of, if you want to get your headspace clear on where to go forward with your nutrition and diet. Yeah,
definitely, guys. It's on their homepage as well. So just remember www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. Also, check out our On It page, just with all the supplements that me and Johnny have been using lately. So we've, obviously, we went over in June to speak to On It. We actually went to the On It Academy. We did the podcast over there with them as well. It was great. We'll never recommend anything we didn't use ourselves. So get on, look at our page. It's the /.onit on our website. And use the coupon code, Johnny.
Yeah, Vision Board for 10% off of all of your purchases. What you'll find there is all their supplements, all their merchandise, their training gear. If you guys have any questions about any of that, send Tristan and I an email at info@thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Definitely. I was on there last night. I've never tried Alpha Brain. So yeah. I know you've recommended it, so I'm going to try that. I bought the buffalo bars, the
ones that DeFranco gave us.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited.
Are they on the website in the last episode?
Yeah, they are. It's about $4 a bar, ends up. I think it was like $44 for 12.
Okay.
So I like to I usually buy protein bars from Quest, but sorry, Tom, but I'm going to be trying some new ones.
Yeah, we got to try those when we were in Jersey visiting our boy Joe D. And I remember, these things were like pretty, the texture was the thing that impressed
meaty,
me.
Man.
Yeah, exactly. It was almost like getting a piece of a steak and putting it in a to-go wrapper, and here you go. But super healthy, super packed with protein, kind of like filling the gaps between meals.
Definitely, guys. So check that out. Guys, here's the interview with Evander Holyfield. Just a quick apology. There was a few technical difficulties, so we actually had Evander on for 38 minutes at the end. He was only actually meant to be on for 15 minutes, but we were just having such a good time. The conversation just kept flowing. At times, we're in Sydney. I think he might be in Atlanta, Georgia. So, the line can sometimes drop out, but when it's on, it's on. And he's dropping some really good stories. So what I do say is, at the start, it does get better, the actual line quality.
Yes.
So just be patient with it.
Be patient. We're talking to Evander, the real deal, Holyfield, in my opinion, one of the top heavyweights of all time, the top cruiserweight of all time.
Absolutely.
And it's one of these things that the audio does get a little dodgy in the beginning. As it goes on, it clears up, and he gives us some awesome insight in the way he thinks. And we only know fighters, especially a polarizing figure like the real deal, for what the media gives us, but having interviewed him and seeing where his heart is and how he values his mother and how he values his family, it was really awesome to hear. And what we're thinking maybe is actually for those areas that the audio is messed up, we could probably put those in the notes.
Yeah.
Maybe figure out a way to add the text to the notes so you could kind of read along with it, because there's some awesome value there. Basically, just talking to a kid from the streets of Sugar Hill, Georgia, came from nothing, and he gets to share a story with us. And this is one of those things, we went after him 6-7 months ago. But as we evolved, people were starting to come closer. So it's more or less one of these selfish moments for Tristan and I to talk to a childhood superhero that we used to look up to.
Yeah, definitely. He was on my bucket list. I'm retiring now, so sorry.
Hanging him up.
Board podcast is over.
Yeah. Peace,
sorry,
guy.
It's only Johnny. Nah, don't care. I'm out of retirement again.
That was a quick one.
All right, guys.
Evander retired like that for like a month.
Did he?
In 94. Doctor's orders. And then all of a sudden he came back. That's, and then awesome, became a champion. But yeah.
All right, guys, I'm sure that you want to hear Evander, so we're going to kick it off. Here it is. It makes me want to breathe. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. I got something
for your mind, your body, and your soul. patience is definitely a key with this. Van, remind, I've been reading up on your one son Evan in his path to the boxing ring. Is this, if he was sitting in the room with you right now with all of your experience, what would the one bit of advice that you would give Evan in regards to, you know, going after his boxing goals?
Well, I would tell him patience. Because, you know, patience is key, and he's a talented kid, but somehow everybody think he sometimes thinks he's gonna have to work as hard. And I keep trying to tell us, you know, it don't make no difference. I keep telling you that it really don't make no difference. You have to work hard. And boxing is a sport that, you know, even if you have parents and somebody will tell you, it kind of make the other guy feel, make them even more excited about fighting you, because they want to beat somebody who called us a champion. So they find that it's a little hard because of the fact that people always say, oh man, oh, so if he fights somebody, these guys got something to shoot for. Oh, I think he's paying the holder to his son. Yeah, I think the real deal son.
Yeah.
I would tell them the advantage of this, because, you know, people prepare for you, and yet, you're still a kid and they're a kid, but the majority of the kids are a little older than him, and he's still handling real well. So I feel that, you know, when I was his age, I wasn't as good as he, and I made it. I feel that eventually he's gonna be better, and he will be champion.
Okay. You mentioned being a champion. Evander, what do you think the difference between someone like yourself was when you being a champion and just a normal contender?
Well, I think it's about perseverance. The main thing is that, you know, you have to practice. What do you do when nobody watching? And, when no one is watching, do you really live like a fighter? Do you carry yourself as a fighter? Are you healthy? Do you take care of yourself? All these things are things that I did and happen like to do with me. Like, you know, things my mama said, oh, Johnny, you know, you got to love yourself. You got to practice. You got to outwork people. So it was up to me to continue every day to run and keep my weight down, and not that my weight go up and down and stuff like that. And these things that I did real well, because I came from a very disciplined family, and so I was accustomed to working hard. And so it became anything that you do in life become habit. So, you know, I'm talking about what is bad or good, showing your side is
Evander, you talked about determination and being resilient. What was that moment like when you looked that man in his eyes? I'm referencing Mike Tyson, and you knew that you had him. You knew that he didn't want any more of you. What was that moment like, and what was going through your head when you knew that he quit because he didn't want to dance anymore with Evander Holyfield?
Mike Tyson looked different. He had that because the fact is, we were both on our knees and trying to do this thing. I've been doing it since he's 17, and I'm 4 years old. And, you know, I watched everything that ever fall, because he was I just never seen nobody work as hard as he worked. And only thing that he did was just box. You know, with me, he was just always looking at tapes, watching old tapes and all that. And he was a good fighter because the things that he did. And it wasn't, you know, a lot of people have misconceptions. He's just a bully. He's just like this. No, he's practicing. He's practicing, you know. But a lot of times when he got older and when he became the champion, he became famous. change. And I'm the one who would know that the old ways changed on it and would made us a little bit more beatable than it probably would have been.
In the intro that we had, Evander, I mentioned that you fought the likes of Tyson, Riddick Bowe, George Foreman, Larry Holmes, Michael Mora, Buster Douglas. Out of all those guys, who punched the hardest and who gave you the most trouble, you think?
I didn't remember one. All the guys had their strength and all this. You know, Michael Mora was very crafted. He was sneaky and all this and stuff. Everybody had their little thing, but you know the big part about boxing is being able to make adjustments. And I'm one of the fighters who could make adjustments. And once I make adjustments, then I have to come in. I'm playing Lennox Lewis. Lennox Lewis is one that's talking too, because Lennox, you know, he had that reach in, and he's very strong for his size, and he was he would fight a slow, his pace was slow, and because he had long arms and he had the reach, it was hard to figure him out, but he was very good.
Is that a fight that you wish you could? Obviously, you had two fights where you had a draw and then you lost one decision. Is that a fight that you wish you could have had a trilogy in? Evander, what do you make of the current division at the moment? You've got Anthony Joshua as a champion. Obviously, Klitschko lost the belt to Tyson Fury last year. Do you see the division now and you wish you were still fighting so then you could have a crack at the champions?
Well, you know, I entered the tournament where I was born in the era that these are the guys that I fought. And I was able to, I guess, be one of the... And I think that in the era I would have been, it would have came back. But, you know, I realized that it's the young people learning from us. You know, just like I learned from Ali and I learned from Joe Frazier and all this. And, you know, it's just like even when I saw George Foreman and Larry Holmes, they were older. And, you know, I didn't think much, you know. I had more energy and had more spark, but it's what you're supposed to have when you're young. And so, you know, I look at it, but it's one of them things that, you know, but you have to beat somebody to kind of pull you up. But, you know, ain't nothing to, ain't nothing to laugh about or smile about or be joyful about, you know, because you learn from them.
Evander, I grew up, I was a, you know, born in the early 80s. I got to watch you fight. I wanted to ask you about the nickname, man, because the real deal has popped up in pop culture with hip-hop songs, referenced in movies. Who gave you the nickname The Real Deal Holyfield?
Well, when I was Charlie Holly, different names. And one guy gave me a name, so we're going to call you Real Deal Holyfield from Bright Lights City, Atlanta, Georgia. You know, I'm on the TV saying that, so it sounded good with the name, so I used it. And asked when I made the Olympic team, they said, "What's your deal, Holyfield?" I said, "The real deal."
Yeah.
Like that. So when I lost in that controversial decision, and the Olympic, they started calling me Raw Deal, and I said, "Nah, I still want to be the real deal."
Evander, how did you make the decision that it was time to retire? Like, what was the thought process for that? Because you boxed well into, it was only a few years ago that you retired now, so you're boxing well into your 40s, correct?
Yeah, I, you know, I'm 45, going on 46. I went to Russia and I was doing an interview with him. And you know what? Because they were asking me why I beat him. I beat this guy 11 rounds out of 12, and they gave him the decision. And some of the people asked him, so, well, you know, if you didn't punch about two or three rounds, you didn't throw any punches. Oh, to the end of my life, he could have hit you with shot. And he said, well, I'm my rookie. He said, you ran the whole field of my rib. And so, first of all, storytelling that if you break people's ribs, you messed up. You messed up George Foreman ribs, you messed up Lenny Stewart's ribs, and say, if Evander Holyfield fights you, he's a guy that just won't let up. And so when I realized that they wasn't going to fight me, I kind of felt that why would I continue to just hang around and box him when they done with these young guys? You know, well, the young guys, they ain't got nothing to do. They got these brand new bodies. I don't want to come up, but I can't. Now this young guy, because he, you know, he's used this with strength. And so I kind of thought, well, this time they were champion of the world. I'm just happy with that. And I truly think if you go back and look back and see the fight, I would have been the oldest. Would have been the oldest heavyweight champion of the world. And I would have been 5 times, but you know, and 4 times,
it's pretty good.
I've been under 4 times. I was the undefeated heavyweight champion wherever. I got that, and don't nobody even talk about that. What I'm saying, everything that I've done, at one point, then all of a sudden, I said, you know what? I did something that some people probably never do in their whole life. Yeah, and I
decided to retire. Definitely. Evander, I'm really intrigued about your training because you went up from cruiserweight to heavyweight. Me and Johnny, we're both trainers in Australia, and we just wanted to know, what was your kind of weekly training like? Was it a lot of boxing? Were you lifting weights? Just give us a little bit of an insight into your training.
For one thing, I had the best people. My conditioning coach was a guy named Tim Hallmark. So he would get me in shape before the coaches, before I started doing the boxing stuff. So because he would kept telling me, "Evander, let me tell you something. If you get in shape and before you go in the ring, then you won't take the unnecessary punches." and all this and stuff. And, you know, but, you know, but being in shape, being, I love being in shape. I just thought it was one of the greatest things. Cause my mama had told me, she said, if you outwork people, 99% of the time you're going to win. And so you know what? And it always happens that the person who is in shape is the one can recover. And that is one of the big things that I always wanted to do, be in great shape. My mama said, if you don't break next, you got to fix it. So take care of yourself. And my mom used to make me take naps. I'm like a grown man. I'm 24, 25 years old. My mom says, son, you don't even know when you die. Go in there and just lay down. And I lay down, I fall asleep. And I realized that my mom was wrong. You know, it's a lot of years that I take nap. My mama says, son, you know what? You got to get rest. You know, it's kind of because you know when you're tired. So the whole thing is that, you know, for 20 years or 25 years, I took naps. For 25 years, just take naps. And, you know, I still take naps. Because I find that it works.
Avena, you seem to have a really great relationship with your mum. Was she ringside at all your fights?
No. Every fight that my mama only went to two fights, and both fights I lost.
Oh, no.
She, the first fight that she went to when I was in the Olympic Corral. I win every day, but she don't come number to the one that I lose. I lost. So then when I made the Olympic team, and I begged my mama to come to the fight, she came to L.A., and she didn't go to none of the fights that I won. The fight that I lost, she came to her. I got disqualified. So my mama said she was bad luck. I said, Mama, we don't even believe in bad luck. And I guess so she said she would come to, I talked her into coming to the fight, and I told her my fight with Buster got to mean the championship. And that morning she called me and she said, son, can I just stay in the room and pray for you because I can't stand and see nobody hit you. So can I just not go? I said, yeah. And she asked me, well, don't you have a dance after? She said, yeah. Will you say the first dance for me? I said, yeah. So when I won the championship and my mama celebrated the day she came to the party. Yeah. I said, what? I said, yeah. And she just told me, she finally admitted the truth. She said, son, I can't stand for nobody to hit you. It's bothering me. So it's amazing when, you know, when somebody actually really loves you, it don't work for them because they're not doing it. You're doing it. And so, you know, ain't nothing they can do but hope that you've overcome all the things that you go through. And I mean, you know, you have to really be strong to have someone that you truly love and you watch them fight. And when you hear half of the arena say, kill him! And that's your son that's in the ring. Mm. They tell us they're about to key up. Now, at first, you know, it's a change. If your son winning, everybody's telling your son to kill him. But somebody's telling somebody to kill somebody. Mm. And, you know, I think it's hard on parents who send their kid in the heat of a battle.
Yeah. Evander, so when you were in America, what I always try to explain to Tristan is that in America, if somebody is famous, it's like a different level of fame. So if you could go back to when you were, you know, mid-90s, when you were the champion and you were more than just a boxer, you know, you're a celebrity. Is there ever any, like, woman or man that you've met that you were kind of like, oh shit, like, this dude or this woman, you know, you kind of maybe looked up to? Was there ever a moment where you're like shaking hands with the president sort of thing and you thought to yourself, like, wow, I can't believe how far I've come?
Well, of course, you gotta understand, I met just about all the presidents, Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan and President, both of the Bushes, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton. I met these people, and it was just amazing to know that, okay, wow, here's these people that I never thought that I could shake their hand, and I lived in the same neighborhood with the Bushes, and I go to the game with the Bushes, and Jimmy Carter invited me to go to Jamaica with him, and I'm on a plane with him, private plane. I'm saying, President Clinton, he endorsed my book. I'm saying, the president endorsed your book? I said, yeah.
Wow.
And when I went to China, President Clinton said, oh, Evander Holyfield is my best friend. And it was just amazing to, when all of a sudden, when you go out of country and they say, oh, we have to make sure the Simmons told us that we need to make sure that don't let them happen to this guy. It was just amazing. I mean, being a youngest at 9 and coming up as a kid and didn't nobody care. Now everybody care, So you know what? I was very appreciative of it. And I tell my kids all the time, life's about, the respect that you give people, and it'll come back to you.
Yeah, I like reading the story about, you talk about growing up in the Sugar Hill neighborhood in Atlanta, and then the name, you talk about Cecil Collins. Could you, yeah, man, like, for Australian listeners at home, or maybe the generation who's maybe 15, 16 years old listening, could you share with us and share with them the importance of having a Cecil Collins in your life in regards to knowing what it's like to want to quit, and then having that to overcome to be successful?
Cecil Collins was a poor white kid. I was a poor black kid. And so, of course, when it first started, all the white kids I boxed wasn't poor. I boxed all the white kids who with velvet trunks and they smiled all the time and they were just so happy. I beat all of them easily. Every time I hit them, they said, oh, God, start crying. And one day I fought this Cecil Collins, who was a white kid who was poor and didn't care, and he just wanted to be the very best, too. And he beat me. And I started crying, and I told my mama I didn't want to box them all. I quit, and my mama said, you're not going to quit. You gonna fight till you win again. Then once you win, then you can, if you don't want to fight no more, then you can move on. Well, I fought Cecil Collins again, and he beat me again. And so, the third time when he came down, I was gonna move up in the weight division because I knew I couldn't beat him, but I could beat all the other kids. This could be Cecil Collins. So Cecil Collins didn't show up. I thought so. I got in the weight that I was supposed to get because I had a 5-pound weight. I was going to make myself be heavier and take a chance of fighting somebody else, not fighting him. Then all of a sudden, when I made it to the final, I had to fight Cecil Collins. When I found that I had to fight him, I started crying, and I didn't want to fight him, but I knew if I didn't fight him, my mama was going to whoop me. Now, only difference is that I can't hit my mama back, but I can hit Cecil Collins. I can try to win the Cecil Collins, but he don't beat me straight. I don't beat that I can't. And that's how I start playing every time I fight, because I start playing to just help me with it. And I won that fight, and it changed all. Every time I fall, I'll go free.
Guys, I hope you enjoyed enjoyed that. That was one of the ones on my bucket list in my lifetime. So, you know, that was pretty cool. Like I do say before we came on, we do apologize for some of the audio quality during it. But like we said, that last kind of 15 minutes, the audio quality did clear up a little bit. And it was just kind of on my phone, it just said Evander Holyfield. So
yeah.
It was kind of surreal.
That was
the
cool.
The fact that I was calling him anyway. So
yeah, we were using mobile device, not Skype. So yeah, I look at the phone where we're talking to Evander on. I kind of tap Tristan as Evander Holyfield.
Like, and he texts me now too.
Yeah, he texts him. So Tristan has the real deal texting him.
He texts me.
So, how awesome, man, is him talking about his mother and like, you know, the
you said it, but remember, like, we broke for a few minutes and you said, I need to call my mom.
Yeah.
That's the same.
For sure. For yeah. sure. The Cecil Collins story about, you know, him losing and wanting to quit. And then his mother saying, oh, hold on, if you're gonna I'm going to beat you. You get beat by him, you're going to get beat by me too. Like that sort of thing. And like how he was able to use that throughout his whole career. Man, I was really enjoying when we would ask him questions and then he would kind of giggle. Because, you know, he was enjoying himself, and that's why we do this thing, and it was awesome to share that space. Now, the audio could have been a little clearer, but at the opposite of that, we could have never had him on in the first place.
Yeah, so I'm that's, just stoked. We could have asked him one question.
One question. That's what I told you. I was like, even if we get one question from the guy, because he doesn't do many interviews, he doesn't do long interviews. And
yeah, we only meant to have him 15 minutes, and I freaked because I saw the audio was not working after 7 minutes.
For the first 7 minutes, yeah, it didn't
so
work.
So literally, we're going to have him on for maybe another 2 minutes if we're lucky. And then all of a sudden we got a little bit chatty with him. And I appreciate the fact that he stayed on for that amount of time.
Like, we never hear the stories, man. When he was the champion, we never hear the stories about him overcoming all that stuff and coming from nothing or hearing the story. I didn't know he was a sparring partner at Tyson. I didn't know that. I didn't know he was older than Tyson. Could you imagine being a sparring partner for a guy that's younger than you, that is at that plateau where you want to be, and then making that guy quit in the ring? Like, and then he had nothing, he never has anything bad to say about Mike. Like, I think that they've actually done some business together.
Stuff together.
Yeah.
Makes sense. They've got some stories from before they fought, in the lead up, what, you know, we all know what happened in the fights. But, you know, it's good to see that, you know, they let bygones be bygones and there's more to life than actually one incident that happened in the ring.
Yeah, Mike didn't bite him because he likes biting people. Mike bit him because he was so frustrated. That was that was his expression of being defeated without taking the gloves off.
That's true.
Know what I'm saying? Like, that he couldn't beat him with his fists. And sad to say, they're in the game of fist fighting. So what are you going to do in the clinch? You know, that's what he went for it. And, you know, probably one of those things mentally that you never come back from as Mike Tyson's perspective. But also Evander probably wears on his shoulder. He won't talk about it. I brought it up, gave him the option to talk about it. But, you know, he was as diplomatic as possible in regards to making him quit. But still, the reverence that you and I both hold for our mothers and hearing a guy like The Real Deal talk about that and to talk about his nickname, where he got it from, former Olympian.
That's pretty funny.
Damn, he grew on me, man. I didn't know any of that. Like, a lot of that stuff I didn't know. I just thought he was just a savage animal who was a good boxer who just beat people up.
No, some great questions. Curious questions that really got some new, fresh content, which I really enjoyed too, man. But, you know, Evander is Evander, and I love that sort of heavyweight division back in there.
The golden age.
Yeah. And hopefully they can do it again, but boys, you got to fight each other.
Yeah, Joshua, Wilder, Klitsch.
Lucas.
We don't know the headspace of if he'll ever fight again. We don't even know if Tyson will ever fight again. He's gone through some mental issues to
him. Yeah, Tyson Fury.
But, we got to experience it. Not only in the boxing realm, man, if you take our childhood, I feel really for it. We got to see Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time.
80s and 90s were the best.
In my opinion, Ken Griffey Jr., the sweetest home run swing you will ever see.
Like, when you're watching cartoons.
Joe Montana, the greatest quarterback of all time. Jerry Rice, the greatest receiver of all time. We got to see Bo Jackson run the ball. We got to see Walter Payton. Like, athletes from all the sports.
But it'll be the happiest we've ever been, right? For me and you, we played sports all the day. We watched cartoons. We watched Transformers. We watched Ninja Turtles. You know, that was happy stuff.
And my diet consisted of Pez and Coca-Cola.
Exactly.
I mean, how could it not be any better than that?
We collect Upper Deck basketball cards. You know,
baseball
what I mean?
Cards. Put them in the spokes of my bicycle. Did you guys ever do that? We would take clothespins, and so the spokes of our bikes, we would take the baseball card or basketball card, whatever it would be, and connect it to the spoke of the tire with the clothespin, and every time your wheel would rotate, so you added like a feature to your bike. Super ghetto. See, did you guys ever do that?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, okay. I thought you're looking at me like
it was like a little, but we had like a little, these little things you put on there.
Oh, you actually had real things that somebody had monetized.
Yeah, someone monetized
that were called.
Put it on there.
Oh, we would use our baseball cards to make that noise.
That is ghetto, man.
Yeah, that's what you got to do when you're from the yo. Shout out Youngstown, Ohio 330. That's what's up, Northeast Ohio. Gosh. Nothing is earned. Everything is. Nothing is given. Everything is earned.
Early morning boy.
Yeah, buddy.
Boy.
For sure.
Guys, thanks for tuning in. I'm sure that you enjoyed having a banner on the show. If you could just please tell your friends about it. Subscribe. Leave us a quick 5-star review. Helps us grow. Helps us continue to bring on awesome guests like Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, that would be excellent. You guys follow us on, follow the Vision Board on Twitter. Follow the Vision Board on Facebook. Follow Johnny Stofko on Instagram and Facebook. You'll get an inside look into, you know, the preparation that we do. We're always hustling, grinding. We're pretty open on social media, too, about, you know, who we're bringing on, who we want to bring on. So if you have any questions, feedback, just don't send us, hey, Johnny, Tristan, the audio was shit. We know that. You know, it was one of these things, though, that we got to share the space. So don't, you know, look forward as expecting, you know, perfection all the time because, you know, everything, especially adversity. Tristan and I could have hung that phone up. But we had to deal with it as well, and I'm glad we did, and we overcame a little bit of adversity there with the audio issues.
Definitely. I think the main thing that you could learn from it is that nothing's – always reach out. Don't just expect people – if you don't reach out to someone, they're not going to just want to come on the show. So, for example, it took excuse me, a little bit of guts for us to reach out to someone of the caliber of Evander Holyfield, and he could have easily said no. So.
Well, guys, we started the show 11 months ago, so – 9 months ago, about 8 weeks in, my headspace is already like, dude, the vision board's like an animal. Like, we were only like 5 episodes in. Tristan and I were doing episodes out of our gym. No guests, right? And I reach out on Facebook. I sent Evander a message. And obviously, his people responded back. Somebody who represented him. And he said that it was going to cost us $100,000 to bring Evander Holyfield to Australia. So he misunderstood what I was asking for. And then when I told him, well, we don't want to bring him to Australia. We just want to have him on the show. And then he was like, what's your number? And then that's when I kind of gave up. I was like, man, we don't have money. This isn't. But then, you know, you reached out to him 8 months, 7 months later when, you know, the show has evolved into what it is. And now, you know, we get to share space because we are persistent, patient, and also committed to.
Yeah,
you know,
timing's everything and asking. You know, getting out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, leadership, man. When I used to, you know, work for this company, we'd always say it's a rule number one. It's okay to ask for help. What holds most people back in their personal growth and their personal evolution is living with the idea that you already know everything, or living with the idea that you don't need a teacher or don't need a mentor, and you're not asking for help. So I feel that's where the vision board is.
I agree with that a lot. It's just the only thing that I do want to get people to do, though, when you ask for help. At least attempt to do something, if you get what I mean. Don't just ask for help because you've got a lot of money. You're just pushing across the problem.
Give me an example.
So, for example, just say you wanted. So you're asking for help. You should always try to solve that problem first before you ask for help. Because if you're asking for help, that's a cop out.
Oh, so you're okay.
You get what I'm saying?
I think what you're saying is don't take that asking for help as having somebody do something for you without putting the hard work in.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Right. So, for example,
I see what
you don't ask someone to tie your laces.
Yeah.
You get what I mean?
Or don't ask somebody to buy you a car.
Yeah.
When you don't have a job. I guess you guys understand the temperament of what I mean by it's okay to ask for help.
Absolutely.
Having the wherewithal to know if your brand, if your business, if your relationship has hit a standstill and you're sitting home and you know that things aren't going right. Because something has went wrong, maybe your processes are messed up, maybe your wiring's a little off. So that's when it's like, all right, I need to work on myself. So I need to reach out maybe to a therapist. I need to reach out to a mentor. I need to reach out to a coach. I need to enroll myself in a workshop. That sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's okay to ask for help. But don't stand on the corner when you got all the tools. You could walk. You could see. You're young. You know, and you're just asking for handouts.
Mm.
Good call on clarifying that.
Yeah, I like it though. But yeah, it is very, very important to ask for help. But it just
context.
Yeah, have a crack.
As Aussies would say, have a go, mate.
Yeah, have a go, mate.
That sounds so awful when I say it. I can't even say mate. Where I come from, mate is
so American.
Johnny, thanks for sharing that episode with me, man.
That was awesome, man. That was really cool, and I'm excited for the next time we get to have something like a Holyfield episode to compare to.
Definitely. Guys, remember, get your free ebook, your abs ebook. It's got a quick meal plan in there as well. Free download at the website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. Big shout out to Onnit. Make sure you use coupon code
Vision Board for 10% off of all your purchases.
And get them in. I've just ordered a new batch of stuff too, guys. I'm excited to get it in.
Yeah, get involved, man. Get your human optimization on point. Get your vision board on point. Like and share, subscribe to the show, and support the movement.
Guys, we will check you out soon.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast. Stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.